But you want to stay for this talk. You really?
All right.
It actually finds your friends.
So so they've done good things.
So has this session been changed? Well, but is it still eligible for standing?
It should be.
Isn't good enough because there's a lot of them that are not this year. Do we know for sure this is eligible for standing? Who's the moderator?
I am.
Okay, could you make a phone call and find out, please? Thank you.
But I...
we decided that it would be like to make things better.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
these other guests?
Aloha and good morning, everyone.
Oh, I don't think we need a microphone even.
Oh, you have to record it, right? Okay. Aloha and good morning. I'm a student in University of Hawaii, Manoa. I'm interested in violence. That's why I come up here, this discussion with Heather. And okay, so I'm really, really excited to be here with these renowned researchers who I have read about it while doing research projects and all that. So welcome, everyone. And today we have a rich panel for presentations. As a moderator, I'm also supposed to announce that I do not have any conflict of interest whatsoever. And our first presenter, I would like to introduce Dr. Cocker. So she sits in the Verizon Wireless Endowed Chair in the University of Kentucky Center for Research on Violence Against Women. She is full professor in the departments of obstetrics and gynecology and epidemiology. So please do welcome Dr. Cocker.
Okay. Well, let me just say for the audience, we're pinch-hitting, if you will. The individuals who had the panel that you were advertised for could not attend. So we put this panel together less than 2 weeks ago. So without, and let me make sure, can you guys hear me? Okay. What I'm going to do is actually talk about some analysis from the Kentucky Women's Health Registry. And I'll tell you a little bit about the registry as we go, but I want to mention that there are flyers from the registry in the back of the room if you'd like. And you can go online and essentially see the set of questions. And I have a copy of the questionnaire if that is helpful for you. So obviously I'm going to talk about intimate partner violence. You'll hear me say IPV, that's what I mean by intimate partner violence, and gynecologic health. And I'm focusing obviously on Kentucky, given that's where the data set rests. I want to quickly say that I acknowledge my co-authors and also let you know that we have no relations to disclose for these sets of faculties. We have kind of joint affiliations in terms of my being in the Center for Research on Violence Against Women, and we're also using data from the Kentucky Women's Health Registry, and that's in the Center for the Advancement of Women's Health. Okay, so per APHA recommendations, I'll provide you with a slide that tells you what I'm going to talk about. So what I'm going to do is to provide, really it's not exactly a conceptual model, but perhaps a way to think about how partner violence could affect gynecologic health. And then I'll briefly review existing literature. Corinne and I and two other faculty were co-authors on an APA chapter of an upcoming book, and we reviewed partner violence and health, that huge coverage, and including health costs. So this is really coming from that. And lastly, then I'm going to basically go through how partner violence is associated with a range of gynecologic outcomes based on the Kentucky Women's Health Registry. All right, here's the mechanism slide, and I'm really not going to go through this other than to say this is a way, not the only way, obviously, to think about how partner violence, and when I'm thinking about IPV or partner violence, we're not exclusively thinking about physical violence, which is what we typically think of, but also sexual violence, which has particularly important ramifications when we're talking about gynecologic health, and then also psychological abuse, and including stalking in the psychological abuse. Clearly, child abuse and parental partner violence or witnessing violence is associated with intimate partner violence. In fact, they frequently co-occur. And when we think about the outcomes that I'm going to really be talking about, which are in the purple square rectangles, I guess, there are different routes by which partner violence might affect those outcomes. So that just gives you the gestalt of what we're going to be talking about. All right, so Kentucky Women's Health Registry is a unique resource in Kentucky, and it's actually just really begun in 2006, and I'm going to use 2006 to 2007 data. This is a cohort study, and the idea is to understand how risk and protective factors may differentially affect women. Now, there are only going to be women in the Kentucky Women's Health Registry right now. And it also gives the opportunity for women to participate in research. We know that women have not had the same access to clinical trials and those sorts of things. So that's really the purpose. The long-term goal is to recruit 25,000 women across Kentucky. The hope is that we can develop a population-based registry. And when I say registry, we're talking about a group of women who are willing to be contacted for research, but in addition, they complete a survey. So the survey is what I'm going to really be talking about from here on out. To date, we have, and actually this is not quite right because we have a few more. It's an ongoing registration, but about 5,000 women have been included in the, completed at least one survey, and 60% have completed that second survey. I mentioned it was a cohort. I'm actually going not to be talking about cohort data here. It's cross-sectional. All right. I knew that was going to happen. That's the answer to the CME question right now, I'm sure. Okay, for this talk and from the Kentucky Women's Health Registry, we're defining partner violence based on this following three questions. The first is, in your lifetime, and then the response options are, in your lifetime, has this ever occurred? And then there's an option in the past 6 months. So we can then get from that set of options, never, past 6 months, and ever, not 6 months, you can get information about current as opposed to a lifetime experience. So that's the physical abuse question. And then the question on sexual abuse with the same response options. And then stalking. And this comes from the Jaden and Songbook 10 items. We put them all into one question. I should say this predates me being in Lexington, but I think that my colleagues did a great job in putting this together. All right. What do we know about intimate partner violence and sexually transmitted infections? Well, we reviewed the existing literature on this topic, and when I say STIs, that's sexually transmitted infection, and we looked at lifetime ever having a sexually transmitted infection, and we also looked at current infection. And of the 17 studies that the 19 studies that addressed this, 17 found association with ever having STD and partner violence. The association was not as strong for current partner violence and current STIs. And I'm giving you the references. If you would like all the references, just send me an email and I can send you the slides. CME credits?
Yeah, but right. We won't have your information. We'll have like the, you know,
okay.
The canceled, yeah.
Okay. Alrighty. Thank you. Okay. There are three studies that reported that sexual IPV was more strongly associated, would make some sense, with having a history of an STI than physical or psychological. So I'm going to do this thematically. We're going to see what the literature tells us, and then we switch to Kentucky. Okay. So what do we find in Kentucky? Well, we do find, let me do a little orientation with this slide, because you're going to see several like this. What I'm doing is comparing the women who had ever experienced intimate partner violence, which is about a third of this population, and when I say intimate partner violence, we're talking about physical, sexual, and psychological during their lifetime. So about a third of the women had reported any of those, and many reported the common all three of them, if you want. What we then find is that 26% of women who reported lifetime intimate partner violence also reported having a sexually transmitted infection, compared to 8%. We then calculated a prevalence rate ratio, because this is all prevalence data, and we adjusted for age, pack years of smoking, and education, because women who have experienced intimate violence differed from those who did not based on those factors. Okay. So about then almost a twofold increase in prevalence of ever having an STD associated with intimate partner violence. We then have a series of questions on in the past 12 months. So this is important because we really have issues of temporality in a cross-sectional study. So we then looked at lifetime intimate partner violence and ever having, in the past year having frequent urinary tract infections, and we find about a 40% increase associated with intimate partner violence. All right, now we're going to move on to one of my favorite topics. This is the association with intimate partner violence and cancer. This is a note to remind me to say to you that when we did the review, we were including studies that had at least 500 individuals in those studies, because these are cancers, a fairly rare condition, so we would need
fortunately is rare, we would need a fairly large sample. Okay, so there have been 3 studies to address intimate partner violence and ever having an abnormal pap smear. That is not does not mean cervical cancer. And all 3 have found an association. And then there are 3 studies that investigated intimate partner violence in invasive cervical cancer, and all 3 found a significant association. Makes sense in terms of women who experience intimate partner violence more likely to have HPV and actually have persistent HPV, which is what's key for cervical cancer development. So this slide is a little bit different than the one I just showed you, but I wanted to show you the differences, particularly based on the type of intimate partner violence. So here we're looking at any intimate partner violence, and then we look at the specific types. Now, I should tell you, although it's not on the slide, that women who are reporting sexual intimate partner violence, more than half also experience physical and stalking. Okay, so there's a lot of overlap in these. But I'll do the short and the sweet. What's presented here are the numbers in the categories, number of experienced partner violence, and then this is the proportion that reported ever having cervical cancer. So as you can see, it's more than a 2-fold increased risk. We do not have information about HPV, but HPV is in the causal pathway. All right, moving now to intimate partner violence and pelvic pain or chronic pelvic pain. IPV has been associated with an increased risk of chronic pelvic pain or abdominal pain in all 5 studies. And partner violence is particularly sexual partner violence is associated with painful intercourse, okay, in all 4 studies to address this association. Okay, 3 studies explore intimate partner violence and lack of sexual pleasure. What do we find in Kentucky? Well, we really find a consistent pattern. Now, these are looking at intimate partner violence, and then in the past year, their reports. All this is self-report of pelvic pain, about a 40% increase there, 20% increase in pain with intercourse in the past year, and then chronic lifetime pain, about a 60% increase. I have the 5-minute warning, so I will speed up. all right. Next, we looked at intimate partner violence and menstrual pain, menstrual pain or irregularity. Partner violence is associated with painful menses in 6 of 8 studies, and intimate partner violence is associated with menstrual irregularity, including excessive bleeding or endometriosis, in all 3 studies that have looked at that. What do we see in Kentucky? Fairly consistent pattern. A lot of these factors, I was really surprised at this. The literature really doesn't address, particularly the premenopausal syndromes, and mood disorders associated with menses, not really explored in the literature. We did find an increased risk, not only with ever having premenstrual syndrome, but also with mood swings, and you can see the other associations. All right, what about other GYN outcomes? And this is an area where there's really very little research. There have been 2 studies to look at intimate partner violence and hysterectomy, and both noted an association. There's only been 1 study to look at IPV and uterine fibroids and did not find an association. What do we find in Kentucky? We find that partner violence is not associated with having fibroids or with infertility. Okay. This is the last topic I want to talk about is really of great importance when we think about sexual health, which is really that sex is an important part of our lives. And if partner violence is affecting that, and one can see certainly how it might, that's an area to really explore. So we looked at, there are 3 studies that explore this, including the large WHO study, and all 3 found an association with partner violence and lack of sexual pleasure. Now, what we did with the Kentucky Women's Health Registry is look at a range of different factors that got at the issue of sexual pleasure, but did not have that specific question, unfortunately. So as you can see, these are really looking at menopausal symptoms, and we restricted the analysis to women that are 40 and older in terms of thinking that they would be at higher risk. And as you can see, that there is really no association with the 2, low sex drive and vaginal dryness. And this is current reports in the past year. A slight association with severe hot flashes, 20% increase there. The real association was much more strongly associated with urinary frequency and particularly urinary incontinence, which is defined here in this study as currently using adult pads.
All right, what are the gaps in the literature? I'm basically telling you what we know in Kentucky based on three questions. So we're actually going to go back to the Kentucky Women's Health Registry and add more depth in terms of timing of the partner violence, the frequency, getting duration, and those sorts of information so we can really do analyses in dose response and recency. All right, we need cohort studies, and fortunately, the Kentucky Women's Health Registry will be a good resource in terms of cohort studies, but there really are almost no cohort studies to look at these particular outcomes. We need studies to determine mediators and moderators. What we really need is the issues of women exposed to partner violence. What are the resiliency factors and risk factors that actually interact? All right, and we need biologic markers. I showed you that mechanism slide, and it's just a guess. We really don't know in terms of biologically how intimate partner might affect these outcomes. And we also need a validation of the health outcomes. These are all self-reports. And that, of course, drives our clinician friends crazy. A lot of things that we're asking can only be evaluated based on what the woman's reports. And obviously we need repetitious studies, replications, there we go. Okay, so I've gone through a range of different gynecologic outcomes that are associated with partner violence, and you may be a little depressed at this point. So I wanted to end with the good news. And for those that you just came in, we're talking about the Kentucky Women's Health Registry. And if you would like a flyer, you can get one in the back of the room. It's a really nice resource. And what we're encouraging, we would be happy to have other states do this. So knowledge is power. Having the Women's Health Registry in all states would be great. We know from our experience, and others know, that it is possible to screen for intimate partner violence. It is feasible and it is acceptable to patients. It's probably less acceptable to the clinicians because it takes time. We're working through this at UK right now. There's early evidence, this is a paper that's coming out really soon, that screening and referral does reduce the impact of intimate partner violence on women's health. Kentucky has now developed a comprehensive and effective domestic violence and rape crisis program. A lot of states do this. We've really seen a great success in Kentucky in terms of the femicide rates really going down because the services are in place. It's that tertiary service base that you need, but it matters. I think that is it. And we need to move toward primary prevention, the easiest thing we can do. I mean, I'm joking. That's hard, hard, hard to do, but we really need to make that step. Okay. All right. Thank you.